sense of relief. Ah, yes, the elephants had survived. Fortunately, the young lieutenant in charge of the platoon had to remove the elephants from the list, thought the vet as he washed his face. Since coming to Manchuria, he had met any number of stiff-necked, fanatical young officers from his homeland, and the experience always left him shaken. Most of them were farmers' sons who had spent their youthful years in the depressed 30s, steeped in the tragedies of poverty, while a megalomaniac nationalism was hammered into their skulls. They would follow without a second thought the orders of a superior, no matter how outlandish. Commanded in the name of the Emperor to dig a hole through the earth to Brazil, they would grab a shovel and set to work. Some people called this purity, but the vet had other words for it. An urban doctor's son, educated in the relatively liberal atmosphere of the 20s, the vet could not understand those young officers. Shooting a couple of elephants with small arms should have been far easier than digging through the earth to Brazil, but the lieutenant in charge of the firing squad, though he spoke with a slight country accent, seemed to be a more normal human being than the other young officers the vet had met. Better educated and more reasonable. The vet could sense this from the way the young man spoke and handled himself. In any case, the elephants had not been killed, and the vet told himself he should be grateful. The soldiers, too, must have been glad to be spared the task. The Chinese workers may have regretted the omission. They had missed out on a lot of meat and ivory. The vet boiled water in a kettle, soaked his beard in a hot towel, and shaved. Then he ate breakfast alone, tea, toast, and butter. The food rations in Manchuria were far from sufficient, but compared with those elsewhere, they were generous. This was good news both for him and for the animals. The animals showed resentment at their reduced allowances of feed, but the situation here was far better than in Japanese homeland zoos, where foodstuffs had already run out. No one could predict the future, but for now at least both animals and humans were being spared the pain of extreme hunger. He wondered how his wife and daughter were doing. If all went according to plan, their train should have arrived in Busan by now. His cousin, who worked for the railway company, lived here, and until the vet's wife and daughter were able to board the transport ship that would carry them to Japan, they would stay with the cousin's family. The doctor missed seeing them when he woke up in the morning. He missed hearing their lovely voices as they prepared breakfast. A hollow quiet ruled the house. This was no longer the home he loved, the place where he belonged. And yet at the same time, he could not help feeling a certain strange joy at being left alone in this empty official residence. Now he was able to sense the implacable power of fate in his very bones and flesh. Fate itself was the doctor's own fatal disease. From his youngest days, he had had a lucid awareness that I, as an individual, am living under the control of some outside force. This may have been owing to the vivid blue mark on his right cheek. When a child, he had hated this mark, this imprint that only he and no one else had to bear upon his flesh. He wanted to die whenever the other children taunted him or strangers stared at him. If only he could have cut away that part of his body with a knife. But as he matured, he came to a quiet acceptance of the mark on his face that would never go away. And this may have been a factor that helped form his attitude of resignation in all matters having to do with fate. Most of the time, the power of fate played on like a quiet and monotonous ground bass, coloring only the edges of his life. Seldom was he reminded of its existence, but every once in a while, when the balance would shift, and what controlled the balance he never knew, he could discover no regularity in those shifts, the force would increase, plunging him into a state of near paralytic resignation. At such times, he had no choice but to abandon everything and give himself up to the flow. He knew from experience that nothing he could do or think would ever change the situation. Fate would demand its portion, and until it received that portion, it would never go away. He believed this with his whole heart. Not that he was a passive creature. Indeed, he was more decisive than most, and he always saw his decisions through. In his profession, he was outstanding, a vet of exceptional skill, a tireless educator. He may have lacked a certain creative spark, but at school he had always achieved high marks and was chosen to be the leader of the class. In the workplace, too, others acknowledged his superiority, and his juniors always looked up to him.